saw him, he started talking about how he hoped that he was wrong and that there wasn't this elaborate afterlife, and he just wished for blackness. And I'm not a person of faith, but watching someone lose not just their life, but like their afterlife, that just felt like one of the darkest things that I've seen in covering death row. So that's what I think about when I think about the ways in which this case has, you know, impacted or broken me.
And Carrie, in the last 30 seconds we have, speaking of impactful moments, when he says goodbye over the phone to his own son, Izzy.
Yes, that is, I mean, that is such a rare moment to be able to capture on film, and obviously such a raw moment. But I think it really makes the viewer think about the sort of circles of loss and trauma that come with every death row case and every execution, because, you know, there's no happy outcomes in this case, in this story, in this film.
Carrie Blankinger, we thank you for being involved with, for producing this film, investigative journalist, reporter at the LA Times. Her reporting on John Ramirez led to her work with the director, Smitri Mundra, on the new short documentary everyone should see called I Am Ready, Warden, now streaming on Paramount Plus, author of the memoir Corrections and Ink, a memoir. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life.
First and third Fridays, 7 to 8 p.m.
here on KBOO 90.7 FM and available online at kibu.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey.
First and third Fridays, 7 to 8 p.m.
Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KBU 90.7 FM.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kbu.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBU's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, going now until December 31st. What better way to celebrate than by giving your loved one a KBU membership this season?
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 8 a.m. on Tuesday. It's time for Too Much Information with your one host, Tracy Simmons. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Information. I'm Tracy Simmons, and I am taking over for today while Abe is away. Please, as I say every time I do this on my own, don't leave me hanging. Give me a call. I'd like to hear from our listeners this morning. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And, you know, I had to step back just a little bit because I wanted to keep talking about these ridiculous cabinet nominees. But I promised Abe I would wait till he returns. And because it is the Tuesday before the Thanksgiving holiday, which if you've been listening to the program for a while, you know I don't really celebrate that, but I do celebrate gratitude and thanks. I wanted to hear from folks, like, what is coming up for you? Are you spending time with family? do you have family who are kind of on the other side of the political spectrum as you? And if so, you know, what's the plan? Is the plan to avoid? Is the plan to dive headlong? Is the plan to just give hugs and thanks and let it go for the day? I just really want to hear what's coming up for folks. Most people who've been listening for a while know that, you know, my family is a family that most of the people are either in education or politics. So we dive headlong, but we have similar politics, so it's not as scary. But I recognize that that's not true for so many Americans. And the polarization that we see in our society is playing out in families. I've heard folks sharing that they are, you know, kind of distancing themselves, to put it mildly. Others are straight up canceling family members and deciding, nope, I can't be around that toxic level. I just want to hear from folks, you know, what are you doing? And then want to give some, you know, opportunities to engage with strategies. So I'm always talking about strategy. That really is the way my brain works. That, you know, because we are so polarized in this country, the turning away, the canceling, I'm not sure if that really helps us build connections to move through this next bit of time. I'm going to give people the opportunity to tell me what they're doing. But I have my own ideas, right? And I've been leaning into the work of Professor Loretta Ross. She is a esteemed professor at Brown University. And Loretta Ross has been doing work for quite some time on the calling in culture. Currently in this country, we have a call-out culture. Someone says the wrong thing, and we jump quickly to tell them what they did wrong. Sometimes that's a public call-out. Sometimes that's a shaming and blaming the person. And if you recognize kind of the anti-DEI folks, they will tell you why they don't like DEI. Well, they'll lie. One, they'll say that people, you know, DEI hires, that's the thing. This idea that people who, you know, benefit from diversity, equity, inclusion efforts are people who are not highly skilled, right? There's all of that, right? And we know that's debunked. But the other part of it is the language, shifting language for people, whether that's language about people's bodies, language about, you know, history, language about how do we police language. And that is scary for folks, especially for folks who don't really want to change their behavior. And part of the culture that we exist in, that call-out culture, we're trying to move to more of a call-in culture, cancels folks for saying the wrong things, thinking the wrong things, supporting the wrong things, you know, really deciding that people can't learn and can't change. I think canceling somebody or even calling them out is a symbol for you that you don't think they can really change. You just want to tell everybody else how right you are about whatever is happening. And I think, you know, when we jump to the canceling and calling out, we don't give space for teaching and learning. And I think the beauty of human experience is that we can learn. We can decide to give grace to others. We can decide to see people as whole, meaning their whole lived experience, because oftentimes that's what's guiding some of the fear, right? We also have to think about the socio-political environment that we exist in. And within that socio-political environment, right, there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation, fear-mongering, right? Watch the news. If it bleeds, it leads. Watch Fox News. It's, you know, consistent messaging about who is good, who is bad, and what we should do about the bad people. And so we're going to take this all into account as we are kind of approaching this society that has reached a fever pitch of polarization, of demonization, and how do we get back to love, right? Dr. King talked a lot about the beloved community and what that looked like, right? People taking care of each other, you know, mutually beneficial relationships, shared power, all of that, right? we will never get bigger by demonizing, canceling, and creating even more division between us. So, you know, I live in a certain kind of world. I am a Black queer woman, cis woman, and part of the world that I live in is in connection to all kinds of different people. I'm sure I have friends on the political spectrum that is different from mine, but we don't really go there because some of these are very long friendships that I don't know what's the use, right? I'm probably not going to convince them otherwise, but these are, you know, 15, 10, 20 year friendships in some cases, like people I've known since fifth grade, you know, moved to Florida. And now they're like, well, you know what? And I'm like, no, okay, anyways, how's your baby doing? You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, within that context of, right, just like loving up on people, for me, it's like, now is go time to build community, to create connection, to extend care and grace, and also grace with myself, right? Like, I think a part of extending grace to others is knowing that you get things wrong too, all the time. I get things wrong a lot. There's no way to be a human. Part of learning is getting things wrong. And we oftentimes go straight to the blaming and shaming, getting people to sit in their fear space, in their guilt space, in their shame space. And, you know, I facilitate a lot with regard to diversity, equity, inclusion. And I have named those like the horsemen. they are the horsemen. Blame, shame, guilt, fear, and denial. And they're emotions that are real emotions, right? I don't like to take away that people have emotions. But these particular emotions and reactions really are blockages. They show up as blockages to hear, to understand others and where they're coming from, to even understand history, right? I mean, part of the anti-DEI, you know, I don't like that stuff. CRT, right? Critical race theory. All of that fear mongering has been around. It makes me feel bad. It makes children feel bad, right? And what they're tuning into is those emotions, feeling like they have some guilt that they owe for things that happen. When none of us were even here, what are you guilty about? You know, you could maybe feel guilty on behalf of your ancestors, but guess what? Your ancestors. Just saying, as a Black woman in America, my DNA is definitely not 100% African. So I just feel like, you know, maybe if we leaned in differently around these emotions, blame, shame, guilt, fear, and denial, we would be better off. And I just think about when those conversations are happening across the Thanksgiving table, you know, how are you leaning in? Are you calling, you know, uncle out? Are you saying, hey, stop being a racist, blah, 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 where there's going to be a defense mechanism, a denialism, and the conversation gets shut down? Or are you going to say, where'd you learn that? You know, how did you come to that conclusion? And so within the work of Loretta Ross, I want to attribute all of this that I'm saying to her brilliant scholarship. But, you know, there are some ways that we can do this more effectively. The one is the call in. Hey, you know, I feel like I know you pretty well. And I know you to be a person that cares deeply about others, even people you don't know. Tell me more about why you're saying this particular thing right now. I think this works well for, you know, folks who are making assertions about other people and, you know, their worth and whether or not they should, you know, we should have mass deportations in the country, right? Leaning in there, you know, even asking people about those views can sometimes feel scary. It can feel scary. But I think if you open the door to listening and understanding, you also potentially open the door to being heard and understood. And I just feel like this is a critical juncture in our country where we've got to learn the tools, we've got to use the tools, and really strive to create the kind of community that we can exist in and that we will need to exist in for at least, you know, the next probably forever, but likely significantly for the next 4 years. I just want to read something that our engineer Sonia has said. Tinder cishet whites complete discomfort at seeing the harm the reflexive bigotry causes with cancellation. I mean, I think there is, of course, right, people don't just show up in the world with bigotry. There's a process that happens, right? That's that socialization process from the time someone is zero, right? And Bobby Harrow, another amazing scholar in 2008, came up with this idea of a cycle of socialization, that socialization doesn't just happen in the sense of, you know, one generation, but these ideas are passed down generation over generation after generation. And it starts with, you know, being born into a world where there's all of these systems of supremacy already in place, whether you're born a girl child, whether you were born with a different, you know, sexual orientation, whether you were born with a disability, right? All of those things matter, right? So you are born into a world, you have no knowledge of the systems that currently exist, but you learn quickly. You learn really quickly, right? There's a girl child. Oh, she's so sweet and pretty. Look at her. Oh, it's a boy child. You know, oh my goodness, let's get him some blue. He's so strong and handsome. These ways in which we are socialized begin immediately. And by the time you get to, say, kindergarten, grade school, you're participating in other institutions, whatever you're learning at home, because your home is likely reflected in the people around you and the systems and institutions around you, they become reinforced. And that reinforcement continues. It continues throughout adolescence. And likely, if you're like me, most people know, but I'll remind you, I was raised in a, you know, pretty interesting Catholic family. My granny went to church more days than I could count. You know, my mom went to, 15, 14 years of Catholic school. But, you know, there was, of course, a lot of flexibility with that. But, you know, you learn things and, you know, they're reinforced and you get to a point where you either decide to comply with all of that or you decide to rebel. And oftentimes the folks who rebel end up being on the outskirts, right? The black sheep of the family, the person in the family that everyone's like, oh, are they going to make it? You know, let me check in on such and such. Everybody shows up to the graduation because they weren't sure if you were going to make it or not. And so there's, you know, benefits for conforming to whatever that socialization that you've been receiving, whether that's bigotry, whether that's some form of racism, ableism, sexism, you know, homophobia, transphobia, all of that is being taught, right? And so the person who emerges can either choose that, yes, I'm going to continue on this way, and I'm going to continue teaching my child for the next generation, that next cycle, that same thing, or you get off the cycle, right? And you decide, no, I'm not doing this, I'm not participating in that. I'm not investing in those terrible ideas that I have rejected, right? So then you teach your child something else. And I think the folks who just stay on that cycle over and over again are being reinforced in so many ways, right? That's what their community is saying. That's what the people that they're closest to are kind of radioing in to them. And so to get people off the cycle, it won't happen if we're not able to have conversations. It won't happen if we're not able to connect across difference. And I say it all the time, right? For people who are racist, I likely will never have the opportunity to engage deeply with them. But if you are an anti-racist and you have connections to people who are racist, you might, right? You might have the opportunity to say, hey, well, what about such and such? They're in our family. They're, you know, a person of color. Right, you know, you like them, right? Why did you think that somebody else would be very different from them, you know, begin making those connections. And I think it's just sometimes as a society, we put a lot of emphasis on things that really don't matter. Right now, I mean, there's a whole conversation going on about, you know, what bathrooms to use. And it's like, okay, this person who is the quote unquote president-elect, I'll say that very gently, is talking about raising tariffs from Mexico and Canada, our two biggest allies and the closest countries to us that we receive a lot of goods from and trade a lot of goods back to. Why would we do that? Why is no one asking that question and questioning, am I going to be able to afford groceries? Because guess what? Most of the produce that we eat on a regular basis and fresh food that we consume comes from Mexico. Many other goods and foods and services come from Canada. No one's asking that. We're focused on the wrong things all the time. And so how do you begin to have the conversations, once again, across difference about the things that matter and enter into the conversation curious rather than let me tell you? Because of course the last thing someone who is you know, low information, just trying to be nice, likely not college educated, likely living in a little bit of a bubble, the last thing that they're going to accept is someone who they see as an elite telling them what they should think and what they should know. And so right, these are all strategies. I think about this idea, too, of Loretta Ross, where she said, you know, you have some options, right? There's the five C's. Calling off, hey, can't do it today. I don't have the bandwidth. I don't have the interest. I'm not going to fight with you right now. I can't do it. The ability to just kind of walk away. When you know you are overwhelmed, you know you are not in the, you know, proper mental space to engage deeply with someone who, you know, might be slightly abusive, might be quite abrasive in the way in which they communicate, you have the ability to call it off. And secondly, you have the ability to call on, right? This is that, hey, you know, you typically said you wanted to, you know, get rid of all these other people. But, you know, isn't grandma from Italy and didn't she come here with, you know, dad and, you know, like begin to have that conversation? Like, how does that work out, right? What's different? What's different about these people and us, right? Like leaning into that conversation, calling on people to show up potentially as different. I'm tired of talking. I'm going to go to the phones. I also want to encourage you, please, if you are interested in sharing how you are managing this holiday season, specifically the holiday coming up on Thursday, that is usually one that includes family and food and friends and hopefully fun in this sociopolitical environment, please do. The number to call, KBOO Radio, 503-231-8187. Call me. Santiago is on the line. Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning. You know, I've pretty well have eliminated anyone in my life who doesn't see the humanity in marginalized communities. So if they do exist, I have pummeled them. I have pummeled them mentally into submission where they don't even bring it up anymore because at this point, like, I just don't want to do emotional labor for free for people who, you know, who will consistently show themselves to not be fundamentally interested in the in a system that ultimately seeks to repress the most marginalized. So with that, like, I mean, unless I just met you, I really don't see the point in trying to reach out a hand at this point. If I've known you this long and you still vote for Trump, like, I don't have any friendships in my life that are worth preserving. because of that, because at the end of the day, like, these are, you know, you're playing with live ammunition. And I think it goes back to the idea that we just have the, we're just kind of fed this idea about politics almost being like a souped up form of debate, and the best debater wins. And that's kind of the deal. Like, we've gamified politics. Like, it's not the distribution of power. It's about wearing your colors and rooting for your team. And I think that's what's fundamentally missed about politics in America, is that, well, politics anywhere, politics is a distribution of power. And we've got politicians who are playing with live ammunition who obscure that very fact. So, I mean, I don't know. And then in terms of, like, what I'm doing to prepare myself, like, I'm trying to educate as many people as possible, you know, with the few conservative friends that I do have who didn't vote. I know most of the ones in my life didn't even vote for anybody this year, so there's that. But the ones who didn't vote, you know, I explained to them, like, this system doesn't exist to help anyone. You know, I was like, you know, the conservatives and liberals differ on social issues, but when it comes to working class issues, they're mostly lockstep. And, you know, that's why everybody's immiserated and everybody's broke, but they got us arguing over trans kids. And, you know what I mean? I don't see the point in emotionally laboring for people who, or extending a hand or being kind or courteous to people who will outright vote against, at least in a person-to-person sense, outright vote against a vote to intentionally harm marginalized people. So, I mean, yeah, it's a, yeah, I mean, I don't, yeah, that's, yeah, I'm, well, you know, it's just, I guess for me, because it's like, you know, we've had this conversation multiple times, like, we don't have two parties that are fundamentally opposed to each other. They agree on a lot more than they disagree. And, I mean, it's like, I mean, we saw it over the election, you know, especially post-DNC. Like, this is, I mean, it's just, our country is fundamentally more right-wing, and it's because we just have a bunch of politicians who are telling fairy tales. There's one side telling fairy tales, and the other side is trying to move into position to take advantage of those fairy tales, and that's it. I mean, I don't know. We need radically different political education, something that's fundamentally anti-capitalist, something that's fundamentally, I mean, when it gets down to it, I mean, almost, I would say anti-American, because, you know, we're seeing right now that, like, this is America. Trump is America. Trump is who America is when you strip away all of the rights that were hard won by marginalized people. Is who it's always been, and because we've never tackled, and because neither side has truly tackled that fundamental lie, the underbelly, the dark racist underbelly of America has continued to exist and thrive. The fact that we don't want to alienate people based on their racist beliefs and actually hold people accountable for having them, and showing them that, you know, it, finding some fundamental way to show them that it is wrong is how this continues to exist. I mean, we make up lies about what America is when we've never really confronted what America really is. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a, I mean, I've got a few, you know, I've got some folks, if you want to try talking to them, send them your way, but I ain't going to, I'm wasting my time.
I'm saying that probably isn't our work, Santiago. I'm honestly saying it's not my work, but it has to be done. I don't see how we change or how we get out of this polarized environment if people who have proximity to people who are on the far right decide that they just don't have the capacity to have those comments. That's your family. Those are people you have influence over, whether or not you'd like to believe it. I'm not talking about
I mean,
as a black woman,
what I'm saying is that, like, I'm not looking to, I mean, at this point, like, I'm not, if there is conversation to be had, I will have it, but fundamentally, there needs to be a, because, you know, the rights of the marginalized and the oppressed are never popular. They've never been popular. Every civil rights struggle has, in its time, been met with harsh amounts of propaganda against it and being shown to be highly unfavorable. But we still have to, even if people have to be dragged kicking, screaming to the left, that's what has to happen. I mean, there's only so much. I mean, in an interpersonal sense, I might have some influence over a few people, but fundamentally, what we need to be talking about is creating a dual power structure, which comes in the form of anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist parties. I mean, I could name off a handful of them: La Raza Unida, you know, All African People's Socialist Party. You know, there's PSL, Party for Socialism Liberation. I mean, there's a bunch of them, but we need to be involved in ways that get us thinking outside of this false dichotomy. Because the conversations that there are to be had, there is a lot to agree on. The Trump neighbors that I have had the chance to talk to, like, when you break it down to them, that, like, nothing, even if they voted for Trump, when you tell them, like, deporting a million people tomorrow will not change how well you can feed your family or how much gas you can put in your tank, it's a pointless thing to argue about. Some of them get mad and they throw whatever they want, but it's like, okay, how does that help you? You know, because nobody's ever really asked them those questions. And when you make it an issue of working class, like real working class versus the rich, and you include and explain how both parties are complicit, people start listening. Because a lot of conservative working class people, even if they're wrong, understand that the Democratic Party has played a huge part in everybody's immiseration. So pretending that there are two starkly contrasting bodies of political beliefs doesn't really work outside of social issues. And I mean, it's like, you know, like you were asking before about, you know, about changing people. You know, we have to look at this as a multi-decade project, even if we don't have the time, because right-wingers have invested the time for over
my challenge is that if we want to invest time, we're going to have to invest time with each other across difference. We're going to have to do that work. And I say we, not necessarily me, but we collectively, the collective royal we, is going to have to do that, because these echo chambers that people are existing in don't allow for critical thought to actually happen. They're propaganda.
Okay.
So
what I'm saying in response to you is that the only way we break that echo chamber is to dispel the myth that there is a dichotomy between the political parties that we hold, because the people who vote for Trump know that the liberals have done their fair share to immiserate them, even if they're wrong on a bunch of social issues. The reason why they are able to look at a strong man with adoration is because the system has failed everyone. And so if we're going to break those, if we're really serious about breaking those lines, we need to start getting involved in political machinery and organizing that has nothing to do with the two parties that have ultimately doomed us to the reality that we're going to have to live through for the next 4 years. Because, okay. I mean...
All right, well, we can agree to maybe not necessarily fully agree, because, I mean, I just don't necessarily agree. I feel like there's a reason why big money has taken over politics, and it's because that is part of the right-wing machinery. Now we have a strong man who continues to call himself or thinks he's a populist. And I'm saying, in what world is a billionaire grifter criminal a populist? No, I think there's just...
No, a billionaire criminal is a grifter in a country where the political machinery as a whole has failed the working class. That's where a billionaire grifter can come in. Because we haven't had...
Play Citizens United. All of that has been right-wing efforts to take over.
But what I'm saying is that both parties are right-wing.
Has a whole body of people that he selected, and they're all millionaires and billionaires. Let's be for real.
And there's a bunch of millionaires and billionaires in the Democratic Party, too. The difference is they created there's legal machinery for bribery. There's legal machinery for being able to own stocks as a senator that both Democrats and Republicans have taken part in to the immiseration of the working class. The only difference is that Trump is saying the quiet parts out loud, and that makes everybody uncomfortable, which is why... He is replacing.
I gotta get to another caller. I'm gonna leave it there.
I'm just saying, if you're really serious about it, we gotta stop pretending that that Democrats and Republicans, outside of some social issues, are actually like a dichotomy. When they're working,
I've never said that.
We've seen it.
Once again, as a person, I've always had to choose the less harmful of two choices. Not saying that's the only choice, but when we have 15 different parties on the left, how do we even, as people on the left, consolidate power and consolidate the conversation to actually move things? Because those 15 parties are never going to be a viable solution to move from the duopoly. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
I want to make sure I get to
what I'm saying is that we. But how do you look at parties like the Black Panther Party or any of the black organizations that organize outside of the Democratic Party in the 60s and 70s who moved the needle through physical movement, who had no support from either party?
Guess what they actually did? They showed up and they demonstrated. They showed up and they marched. Women's rights. We can't even get people to march over trans rights. We can't get people to do anything because we've all been in a space of apathy. And this is what I'm talking about, right? How do we move out of apathy to action, to actually building coalitions and building those coalitions across difference? That's my point.
Okay,
I'm going to have to leave it here because I got another caller that I want to honor their time. So I'm going to leave it there. We will get back to this conversation, I'm sure, next week. I appreciate you. I love what you bring. I love the conversation. But I do want to honor that Edie is on the line, and I want to hear from Edie.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi. Good morning.
Over 15 minutes ago when I first called, you had asked how we think or hope to act when we're in conversation with people who have different thoughts and feelings than we have. Is that what you would ask?
Yeah, I mean, usually at the Thanksgiving table, and this is not from my own particular personal experience, but it's what people tell me, is that they go to Thanksgiving, and the right-wing family is there, and they're spewing their stuff, and, you know, they're kind of having to, like, manage that and navigate that. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I love the wisdom and the compassion and the strategic approach that you had advocated, and I want people to really go away with what you had said. And I wanted to answer your question and Santiago saying that I don't see a reason for treating people decently if I don't like them. And I'm thinking, well, when there are people whose behavior, whose way of relating, their beliefs, their worldview and attitude, and my emotional reaction or defensiveness when I'm with them are all that I don't like, I still choose to treat them decently because I choose to live integrity to my values, to live a life that is being the change I want, role modeling and inspiring and empowering, to be more minded and open-hearted, less afraid, more centered and resourced in the good that we do have all around us. And that gives us the ability to think and act rightly with compassion and principle and courage and creativity to make the our own behavior and the situation around us the best we can, even though we cannot control what someone else thinks, feels, and says and does. We can control the environment or our actions. And so when I'm going to have a military officer at my table and I am my entire lifetime anti-war, and I'm going to have someone who doesn't care about climate change, which I've been active with for 56 years, I'm going to focus on learning from them, that the purpose of my life is to learn, is to live, learn, love, to heal my own junk and that of my ancestors and the future generations of people around the world I've never met, as doing my part responsibly to heal the world. And so I choose to use Marshall Rosenberg's compassion or nonviolent communication with an attitude of, we all have the same universal needs, and we all feel good when those needs are met, and we all feel bad when they're not met. And how can I use this as a, you know, a game to figure out, oh, what is the unmet need or the important value that is alive for them right now, and how can I honor that? Because I also have those needs or values at some degree, and how can I see our commonality, our common humanity, and if they're afraid, it's because they're not feeling safe. If they're not feeling safe, then I need to ground myself and realize how I am safe, and I can spread that contagious calm and sense of safety and awareness of safety to those around me. If I'm thinking that they're emotionally out of control, then I can control the way I think and frame a situation so that my emotions are more regulated. I can take the deep breath. I can take some patience and use some kind self-talk. I can be curious instead of being judgmental. There was an Apple TV show called Ted Lasso 3 years during the pandemic shutdown. And one of the beginning shows, he had made a statement that all his life people had underestimated him and degraded him, and he always wondered why, and realized it wasn't about him, it was about their attitude, and that's because they were stuck in fear. What we need to be is curious, not judgmental. And then later show, a woman that had come and admitted that she had done these cruel, mean things out of spite and revenge, and he said, I forgive you. And she was surprised. And he said, well, divorce, or in this case, fear, separation of losing the good we have, it's hard. It makes us do crazy things. And my daughter, newly marrying, just went crazy for 12 months. No one thought she would act like that. But it was fear of losing the joys of being single, fear of losing the guy that she wanted to marry her. It was my fear of losing my relationship with my daughter and being able to protect her from domestic violence. It was our fear that made us insane. And I can forgive. I can give, as you said, give each other grace, because we've all made mistakes. We all don't know something. And we all have different memories because we have different toxins in our brain messing up how our brain processes things. And we've all made mistakes. And hopefully we mature, reframe things and rethink things and change things. So we can do that with a sense of confidence that, you know, those people in the past that I thought were so horrible and did these horrible things, I am very grateful for, because all that daily abuse made me strong. I mean, know that there's more to my life with all those near-death experiences I had. I have another purpose. I'm more resistant, more resilient, more courageous, and committed to justice and can empathize with other people. I know I can handle pain for a long time. I see that how the injustice done to me is that done to others. I see the same pattern in the abusers as corporations and the U.S. government, etc. And so that has made me a better person, I think, than the people I see who had the childhood that I wanted. And I think they're moral wimps, social, spiritual wimps. That's very judgmental. I just said, be curious, not judgmental. But it makes me say, okay, if I thought these people were bad in my life, and now I'm grateful because I can be a stronger, better person, better helping people, then it says maybe the way I view things now, I will change later. And so I'm going to give people the benefit of the doubt, the grace ahead of time. I'm going to give gratitude ahead of time, that I'm going to learn and I'm going to become a better me. I'm going to heal some of my junk and I'm going to help do my part to heal the world. And when I'm doing that, I have less time and energy to be judging and criticizing and hating and resenting other people, because I have enough work for me to do that's my responsibility. And that gives me a sense of peace and clarity. And that makes me more resilient and resistant to the temptations. And that makes me more curious and more open-minded and compassionate. So if I treat them with respect, they'll be less defensive and less obnoxious.
Oh my gosh, you said so much, and it was very powerful. And I just want to lean into the extending grace, because I'm saying it, but also to your point, right? It is about your own integrity. It really comes down to, if you are a person who is compassionate and empathetic and caring to others, to change that because you think someone's mean or nasty or bigoted doesn't really solve anything. Right? You're now working and acting outside of your own character.
I'm the enemy myself. And yes. I'm making them feel defensive and self-justifying and stuck in where they are. And, yep. And you know, I cannot change other people, but I want to feel the peace and love, which I have if I'm acting as a peacemaker and a lover.
Absolutely. I appreciate that so much. Thank you, Edie, for your call.
I love you.
I love you too. Take care. I think, and you know, right in this moment, I feel like, you know, there are people who will have access to the people that we really need to be connecting with. You know, in the days since this, you know, historical win, I just want to name that, it's not a historical win, it's the smallest margin that we've seen, and also, of course, you know, I don't necessarily believe that the results are valid, legitimate, right? When I see a less than a percentage point in the popular vote, as well as the bullet ballots and the unexplained, you know, things surrounding that election, I still have questions, and I will still use my air quotes to talk about the former, now future guy. But, right, in these moments since that election was called for that person, even the supporters still seem angry, right? So people walking around with anger, with frustration, not quite sure how to address that without extending oneself, especially if you have proximity to these folks, in a way that says, hey, why are you still angry? Your guy won. What are you mad about? What is this anger that you're walking around with? Because, of course, right, when we think about social media, we think about it bleeds, it leads to news media, we think about the political environment we're in, it's all about outrage, rage baiting, getting people angry about something, because when we're angry about something, we actually usually act upon it. How do we pull folks back from that anger or inquire about the nature of the anger. And I think this goes to Santiago's point, right? People are angry because they've been left behind or feel that they've been left behind. They perceive that they've been left behind. I mean, even the perceptions. So most recently there was a quick poll, and it was to get the perceptions of people about the size of these groups of people that, you know, have been targeted as scapegoats within this fascistic movement that we see ourselves in. And the sizes of the groups were outsized. Trans people, 23% of the population. No, actually, that's not probably accurate. How many black people exist in the United States? 53%? Huh? What? So some of the perceptions are really outsized because, of course, if you're listening to a news media, say Fox News, that is continuing churning out negative propaganda and stories about certain groups that we should supposedly fear, right? Your perception is going to be that those people are an actual, real, not imagined group that is coming to take something from you, right? How do we change people's narratives if we're not able to have the conversation, if we're not able to, in community with them, be able to create a different narrative and potentially get to some kind of common ground, right? And part of what Loretta Ross is teaching is about how do we find common ground. I think about this even in the leftist movement, because there are people on the left who are very, very diametrically opposed, but they have common ground, but they just won't sit in that common ground. They're focusing on all of these other things that are the shiny objects, and I think that's why we don't have coalition building on the left, right? You know, we named 16 different parties, quote unquote parties. None of those parties had any more than 1%, I mean, a fraction of a percent of the vote in this last election. They are not effective. It's not effective to try and do these niche things. What we need to be doing is building a bigger table and a bigger tent. That doesn't happen without, one, a real reckoning around how the moneyed class has taken over our politics. Sorry, I'm going to keep saying that. This is in agreement with Santiago. And also how we've allowed, you know, these niche identities within groups really, you know, overlay the fact that we're all freaking humans. We're all needing certain things in this world. And if we are not in solidarity with each other, as we just saw in this last election, we will not be able to move anything. We will not be able to affect positive change that impacts us all in a positive way. I'm pretty much, that's the one thing I will say with a lot of confidence. Of course, I'm always open to people coming with a different point of view, but I don't think we will be able to move anything if we are not able to get beyond the very small parts of our identities that show up and feel salient to move something way more strategic, way more effective for our future. I think what's interesting, you know, at this point, we're getting close to the end of the show. I do want to honor that if anyone else would like to call, the number is 503-231-8187. Would love to hear from y'all. How are you managing this upcoming holiday? Are you isolating? Are you hunkering down with people who you feel like you can have a positive and productive conversation? Are you going to, you know, your family in Arizona's house and potentially putting yourself in some kind of situation where you might be shattered down by, you know, Uncle Bob? Trying to figure that out. I want to know how people are navigating. I have a very interesting family, and, you know, we will be gathering in a small group. Got a lot of people sick in my family. I want to name that. A lot of people are sick right now. I'm encouraging the elders to get their vaccines, whether or not that is a RSV vaccine, whether or not that is a pneumonia or flu shot or COVID, right? There's a lot out there. I would be saying that right now as well. But in these settings, how are we navigating? I want to also name that during the holidays, people oftentimes sit around and watch TV. And so I have some shows that I think that you should watch. They are documentaries on Netflix currently. One is Power. It really is about the police, and it is a historical and contemporary view of policing in America. Very, very good. We have a problem. We continue to say that there is a problem as a person who is an abolitionist. And we've completely backtracked on that. Thank you, Joe Biden. We want to fund the police. We don't want to defund the police. Here we are, right? We're seeing this militarized, telling blue states, quote unquote, that, you know, if they don't help with this mass deportation, they'll be defunded, all of this, right? But here we are. It's a great documentary, well worth a watch. Another documentary right now, Stamped from the Beginning. It starts with the question, what's wrong with black people? Of course, right, we live in an anti-black society. I want to name that. But for folks who are not black, who are black or adjacent to blackness, it is a really great film to really unpack how we got where we are in society, what was the narrative back then, what is the narrative now, how do we create new narratives for the liberation of all people, including black people? Well worth a watch. And then Buy Now, The Shopping Conspiracy, a great, great lens into the capitalistic intents of big business within the context of holiday, in the context of being an American and having the newest, latest, whatever it is. And how that is impacting our environment. It really helps, especially I've been talking to folks right now who, in their anticipation of a second presidency of old guy, they are trying to hold on to some money right now because, of course, it feels very uncertain. If we're talking about tariffs on Canada and Mexico, our largest trading partners, there will be a transfer of whatever that is to our citizens, and so folks are really hanging tight to the money. This will give you an even better understanding of the current capitalist intent in our country and how maybe we should be more thoughtful about how we spend our money, how we replace old things, how we fix things that are broken. It's eye-opening. Lastly, just a couple days ago, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene has been named as an assistant to Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy with regard to the Department on Government Efficiency. And she's already stated that on the chopping block is public radio. NPR has been named. I'm sure Democracy Now! Will be named. Sesame Street has been named. PBS. Public ways that we get information, including public radio like KABU, are all on the chopping block. KABU right now has already experienced some challenges financially that have put the staffing at a very, very minimal level. A lot of what we're trying to do will be even further compromised by an effort to defund public information and public media. And so I want to invite you to, if you have the ability, please go on to KABU Radio, KBOO.org, and find the donate or give button. We are really trying to increase our ability to continue bringing positive local and national programming that is not bought by corporate media to you on a regular basis so that you can engage, that we can engage as a community in truth, engage as a community in inquiry, and specifically engage as a community in positive change. So I invite you, please, if you have the ability to give, please do. We are really leaning on our community to continue this programming. Lastly, so I just want folks, right, to lean into this work. Loretta Ross has an e-course that you can participate in. I think it's like, it might be like $30 or $40. Oftentimes, this kind of professional learning is very expensive. It is, except she also has a free TED Talk around calling in. So if you just do a quick search for Loretta Ross calling in, you can participate and engage in her pretty quick TED Talk. Amazing and sage woman who has some strategies for us that we will definitely need to lean into in this coming upcoming time that we're in. So I will leave it there and encourage folks that if you are going to that place with that person or that group of people that you are anticipating some kind of negative interaction, that you show up in your integrity, that you show up as a caring, loving person that can dispel any myths about, you know, what liberals do and what liberals, you know, liberals show up as, you know. There's a lot of that has to be addressed as well. And so I just invite you to go with an open mind, and more importantly, an open heart. So that is the show for today. Thank you so much for participating. Those who called in, always appreciate your thoughtfulness and the way in which you show up in the world and contribute to the show. This has been Too Much Information on KBOO. Take care of yourselves and each other. Happy holidays. Over me.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
We know a KBOO community membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community media by making a donation during KBOO's Catalog of Connections campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000